Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 141 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. As you all know, we are a Paul McCartney talk show, mainly dealing with the solo career of the one and only Macca. And I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk. And I'm being joined, as always, by my partner in crime, a backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what is going on, my friend?
Talk more talk. Well, finally, we get to talk. That ties into our show today a little bit.
Absolutely. We're gonna just you got the magazine right there, right? We're gonna go over and we're gonna talk about this new special deluxe edition of Paul McCartney Press to Play at 35. We both just got this in the mail last week and read it, and we're gonna talk about it. So, but first, Andy, what's going on? How you been, buddy?
I'm good, man. Good. Just keeping on keeping on. And, you know, you got some goodies to show. I don't have any really good Beatle-related stuff. I only just got the new Dylan box set of the volume 16 of the New York years, which is...
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. 16 volumes already, man. That's
16 volumes in the bootleg series. And then this one, it's just scratching the surface. It's 16 volumes of... bootleg stuff. There's somebody who knows how to market himself, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's got that. But Beatle-wise, things have been a little quiet. Haven't really hit any fines, but you did pretty well.
Yeah, I did pretty well today and a couple days ago. But you know, I'm really excited too because Kiss is finally. Did something right for a change when it comes to their home media, their home physical media. They just announced a big, massive box set for their 1976 album Destroyer, which I'm really excited about. I pre-ordered that over the weekend, and you know, it was like about $200, and you just got I think it was like four discs and then a Blu-ray, and then you got all this, you know, replica memorabilia from that time. And I was just really excited because they finally seems like they're starting to, you know, do it right when it comes
to the
box set here, because, you know, they've done some box sets and some special editions of their albums. They just, you know, just weren't up to snuff, but this finally seems like it's going to be a really good set. So
is there somebody else like managing their arc there? Okay. Or is it just,
it's usually the, their guitar player now, Tommy Thayer, who dresses up in the Ace, you know, the Spaceman makeup. He's usually in charge of that kind of thing. Well, he'll put like the stuff together, and he knows people that has all the like original memorabilia from that time. And so he'll contact those people and, you know, get them to, you know, loan them their memorabilia for
the
set. Right. So it sounds like they finally listen to fans and they're finally, you know, putting together a package that's, you know, worth, you know, the money that they're doing. So yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm also excited because, you know, we just finished our ranking, you know, our albums ranking, our 30 favorite albums. And a lot of people suggested some great albums, you know. So my wife and I yesterday went to Zia Records, and you know, I had my list. I've been writing some stuff down of albums that I want to get and check out because I never had checked them out before. So kind of excited about that. Picked up five CDs. I listened to one today. Was very happy with it. And I think this was one of your picks, actually, that I got. And that was Steely Dan's
Asia. Asia.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, really liked this one a lot. Enjoyed it.
Yes.
Yeah. I was kind of familiar with some of the other songs, especially Black Cow.
Black Cow.
Josie.
Blues.
Deacon Blues and Peg. I mean, those are your
big
your,
ones,
your
yeah.
singles from the album. But yeah, I mean, really enjoyed that album. Another one I picked up was Love, Forever Changes.
Forever Changes, of course, 1967, the gold standard.
Yeah. Right. So listen to half of that. And then, you know, I enjoyed the music a little bit more than I enjoyed the lyrics, but I'm going to give it a couple more listens and then, you know, see how I feel about that. Another Steely Dan, The Royal Scam,
1976. Yeah.
So check this one out as well. I believe our boy Dylan suggested this one. This was in, I think, his top 20, and that was Warren Zevon. Excitable Boy.
Excitable Boy. Great record.
Yeah, this one has Werewolves of London on it. That would be the track that everybody probably knows.
And Excitable Boy.
Yeah. And then, you know, probably, Tom Brennan suggested this one. This is Loggins and Messina. This is Full Sail from 73. You know, I've never been the biggest Loggins and Messina fan. I you know, that song, Your Mama Can't Dance and Your Daddy Don't Rock. I never liked that song. That song. But this, it's not on this album. So hopefully, hopefully I'll like it. I figured give them a chance. You know, I got those CDs used, so I mean, didn't cost much.
No, Zia, we love Zia and all 75 of them out there.
And I think I took you to 70 of them.
Yes, yeah. You also had a pretty revelation to me during the week. You texted me that you finally listened to the entire of Captain Fantastic.
Yes, and
I've been telling you that for the last two fucking years. Listen to that.
I don't know what happened when I first listened to it back in, you know, the mid 90s when I first heard the album. I don't know what happened, but then yeah, so played it. And just adore the record. You know, I went to go see if I could find it on vinyl today at the Groove, and they didn't have a copy, unfortunately. But
that one was all done, all part of the 17 reissues.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So beautiful,
beautiful packaging on that too. Yes. Beautiful packaging.
Love the artwork on there. Yeah, yeah. Great
curtains. We all fall in love sometimes.
Oh. Right now, Caribou, that might be a different story because, you know, I can't stand The Bitches Back, and I've never been a big fan of Don't Let the Sun Go Down on
But the deep tracks on that album are fantastic. Yeah. Pinky, Grimsby, and Ticking. I'm telling you, Ticking is one of the top 10 Elton John songs of all time.
All right. I'll believe you.
I'm telling you. Listen, I didn't say you're wrong with Captain. Listen to Ticking. I'm telling you, it's incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Then, you know, I had to run some errands today, and I was just like, screw it. Let's just go to the Ingroove and see what I can find. And I was just flipping through the stuff and found some nice stuff. And tell you, I mean, I thought I was really fine with what I had with the Wings Over America because I had the reissue, the color reissue.
The reissue.
So then I'm scanning through, and you know those Columbia ones, they're hard to find. So
very hard.
So I actually found a really, really nice edition of Wings Over America, the Columbia.
The Columbia label. Columbia
because it's got the lines there out there on the side.
And it's got the Columbia, it's got the Columbia font.
Columbia font. You know, it's just a gatefold. So you got the two albums in one and one album on the other side, but really nice shape. The jackets are really nice shape, and I'm really happy I found that fairly nicely priced at $20. So
yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah. And the other one I was happy to find was UK Apple or whatever, pressing EMI of a Band on the Run. I knew
I'd rub off on you a little bit, you know.
Mr.
I don't buy original pressings and blah blah blah.
The jacket's in nice shape, you know. I mean,
if it was
beat up or in ring wear and all that shit, I wouldn't have bought it. But the vinyl is really nice, you know. I love the little apple in the corner there. You know?
Signifying it as a UK release, absolutely.
Right. It came with the poster, was there, so I saw. Oh, what the hell?
How much was that?
My $20 as well, so not bad. You know,
you're up to about 8 or 9 copies of Band on the Run. You're getting there. You're getting there now. There you go. See, I knew I'd rub off on you eventually.
Yeah. Let's see here. This just came in the mail the day after we got the special deluxe.
Now that's magazine. Only a UK, but it's available here now, I think.
Is it now? Okay, so this is the Mike Evans book. This is Paul McCartney, the stories behind the songs. I only thought this was available in the UK, but if you're saying it's you can get it here now, that's
Barnes and Nobles is selling it now.
Awesome, great. So, you know, I haven't looked into it yet because we are, you know, reading the press to play at 35 the last couple of days because I've been working a lot too, so I haven't had really a lot of chance to read, but this is, you know, just the it says Paul McCartney's songwriting output as a member of the Beatles has been exhaustively documented in this book. Liverpoolian commentary and music journalist Mike Evans examined more than 50 key songs from McCartney's long career after the breakup of the Fab Four. So, you know, he's pretty much just going over the stories, you know, he's talking about the albums, and he's not telling the stories of every song, like one or two per album. And right. then you know, so just the key facts on the song. I'd like to see how this is going to be different from the McCartney lyrics book, to see if any of the stories
mash up and tie right. up, or are you going to give us a different story in either thing, which will be interesting and good timing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, happy to have that. So we'll get that.
Nice cover, too. Nice cover.
I actually like that photo, Paul.
It's a great photo.
Yeah, yeah. Then... The thing I was really happy about was as soon as I got home today, I got an email saying I got a package. So I went to the package to go get what came in the mail, and you know, and we got the two frisbees. The red rose. Let's see here, the red rose speed.
Love it.
73. You can see the Apple and EMI on there.
Just like Paul throwing them out the concert, right? Right on the stage, throwing them out. Exactly.
Right. Then you got the Venus and Mars 75, and you see the cat, the EMI and MPL logos on there. So I am going to frame these suckers, put them up on the wall at some point, and just cherish them.
Nice scores, my friend.
Yeah, won't be throwing them at the dog anytime soon.
I should hope not.
Yes. So yeah, it's been a nice couple days, you know, finding
nice stuff, when you get those good days where you do get some good finds, you know, you, right, go through dry, yeah. you go through dry spells, you don't see anything in the store.
Right.
And then you get lucky and you go for, you know, and you just get a couple of good finds. That's the best thing.
Right.
Great feeling.
And then lastly, I did find another Beatles book here. This is The Beatles, The Real Story. This is from 68. This is Julius Fast. You know, so curious about this one. If anybody has read that before, please let me know your thoughts about this this book.
Always interesting just to read books published that from back then, because the narrative was different, of course,
exactly.
even before the 70s. So.
Good point. Yeah.
You know, the writing, especially any writing, especially back then, always worth picking up if you can get a good deal on it.
Yeah. I mean, especially, I mean, depending on who they interview, too, their memories are probably a little bit better than they would be, you know, especially now, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of memories are fresher in the mind, especially in those younger Hamburg years or the early,
sure.
you know, early Beatlemania years. So really interesting to see that. Glad I found it. So you know, again, it's just really nice to for everybody to reach out to us and comment at the YouTube page about all of those albums. And really had a great time with that, with Andy, looking, seeing your picks and, you know, discovering new music. And that was basically one of the reasons why I wanted to do it, too, was discovering music, you know.
Absolutely.
So
a lot of great comments on those videos, which was really nice to see come in. People put their ranking and stuff and things. And mostly, Nicole, everybody was pretty positive with those comments. And kudos to Tom for the idea to do it. I think we showed everybody that we kind of spread our wings, to borrow a Queen song. And we have lots of varied tastes of music. We might just be a McCartney puff, but we're into all different genres of music with that stuff.
Yeah.
We can dive down rabbit holes of other music for
absolutely
weeks at a time. And then I
like that we had a bunch of the same bands, but just different albums from them.
That was very cool too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two or four.
Yeah, you know, you were 80s queen and I'm 70s queen. You
right.
know, it's just really interesting how that worked out. So,
yes. Well done.
Yes. So let's chat about this. This Paul McCartney, play at 35.
Edited by Paul Sinclair from Mr. Super Deluxe Edition.com. And is the second volume that, well, actually they did a book when Flowers came out on the producers.
Right.
And then they did a special on the McCartney Archive, 10 years in the making. Now, I don't have either of those. Do you?
I have a printed, I think David printed the text on the hours
booklet.
So I have it, and I have it printed out, but it's not the actual
book,
you know, produced piece, correct?
Right. So.
Correct. So the magazine came in this nice little, you know, magazine size Ziploc
Christ,
bag.
You kept that too?
Yeah. Well, we got to keep this nice, you know.
Put it on the shelf, Mister. No hype sticker.
Yeah, well, the hype sticker does say it's peelable, but I think I'm just gonna leave that on there.
Yeah, now. Leave that sucker on.
But here's the thing. This was only 1,000 copies were made, which I was kind of surprised by. I thought maybe you'd. You know, he had a bigger audience for maybe 2,000 to 3,000, but you know, he knows, you know, Paul would know better than we about how many copies that he would get. Now, we was first understanding that it was only going to be the first 500 signed, but right. But then we learned that it was 500 were signed, but not necessarily 1 to 500.
No,
right.
It were just random 500 signed.
Right. So yeah. I had end up getting let's see here, copy 561. Right, and mine was signed. So when I did see the signature, I was really surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
signed by Hugh Padgham, which is awesome.
So then what number did you get? So I got 561. What number did you get then?
I got 962.
Wow, up there.
Up there, and it was, and mine was only signed by Paul, not by Hughes. So
yeah.
Just cool. Just very cool that
absolutely.
You just wonder, like, what was the impetus to revisit Press to Play at 35? Why not at 30 or 40? You know, 35 years later, we're going to revisit it? Okay.
Yeah, you know, I kind of question, too, why revisit it now at 35. But, I mean, if Hugh was actually, you know, interested in talking about it, then, you know, good. I mean, it could have been, you know, Press to Play at 46, you know, and I would still would have been, you know, fine with this, you know. But there's some very interesting comment made by Hugh in this article. I mean, Paul asked some good questions when you open it up. You got a little introduction there by Paul. Then he goes right into this interview with Hugh, looking really young there.
Yeah.
You know, probably what he looked like around 85-ish.
Yeah.
When the album was being recorded and produced. But, you know, right off the bat, there was this, the question, you know, how did you come to get involved in Press to Play? And the story about him, you know, say, you know,
how saying how his music was crap, and that his manager, his then manager's wife, heard those comments.
Right. And then you get a call a couple days later and saying, Paul wants to talk to you. Very, very interesting. Way to get introduced to one of your heroes. Stating that the songs you've been recording lately have been kind of on the wimpy side. It comes up, it gets the meeting. Paul asks him, how would you come up with the band and then sound and all that stuff. So that was pretty cool. But now on the other hand. Someone else is thinking he's going to produce the record because, there was a little bit of talk with Eric Stewart in here as well. Now, there was also an interview conducted with Eric Stewart a few years back, I think in 2017, from Special Ducks as well, stating, Eric had thought right off the bat that he was going to be the producer, not Hugh. So, Eric may not have had some nice words to say about, Hugh coming in.
Right.
But both of them were told that they were going to be
producing
the record. So not kind of off to a good start.
but that's Paul. That's Paul sometimes not being the best communicator with relaying what he really, he always wants to please people. Oh, you could produce it. And then you got to get a situation like these two guys. Right. They both think they're going to be the producer and it just didn't happen.
Right. So another cool or not cool, I should say, but another interesting thing, too, that I was reading that, he was kind of underwhelmed by the demos that.
He says, I quote, I remember getting set a cassette of the demos. I went home and played them and was excitingly and decidedly underwhelmed. Damn.
Yeah, again, not off to a good start. But then again, you second think yourself, and you know, who is he to, you know, to judge what you know, these songs and McCartney, you know, obviously, you know, maybe once he gets into the studio, you know, they can work on, you know, these songs a little bit more, and then they become something, you know, different. Which they did. Yeah, so very interesting. You know, the interview was good. You know, we talk, you know, brings up all the other, you know, acts that he was producing at that time, you know, Police and Genesis. Another interesting thing, too, is, you know, the continuation of how highly people talk about Linda, you know, is just fantastic. It's great to hear. It really is.
Yeah, because it really affirms the kind of person that she was. And everybody who's ever worked with her always says the same thing, that she was just a lovely person and contributed to the spirit of what the album was, whatever they were working on. She's very down to earth, homey person. And everybody always says the same thing about her. Everybody.
Right. Everybody. Yeah. So, however, though, he does tell a story where he was, I think, driving to the Hog, and he came upon a fish farm and bought some fish
and he rigged out. And the roadie took the blame.
Yeah. Made the mistake of putting it in the freezer. And obviously, when you do something like that, you know, someone's going to find out. And obviously, Linda, you know, went into the freezer and found the fish there. And, you know, someone got the scolding. Like you said,
Mr. Trevor Jones, the roadie got it.
Thank you. Yeah. So that was a kind of a funny story as well. You know, another interesting bit was, you know, they get into a little bit of not really a tussle, but you know, I'm wanting to do something over again. And Paul was like, you know, well, when was the last time you wrote a number one hit? Right. Yeah.
See, Paul does not like criticism. He likes, you know, he doesn't like criticism of his work. He rarely...
Unless you're George Martin, I guess.
And that is a good point, Paul asked him in this interview that, you know, with Tug of War and Pipes of Peace, you know, because he was so familiar with them, like those albums were like pop slick perfection, which are great. Right. And I love those records, but maybe Hugh felt that he was not challenged enough on those records.
Right.
Which I actually disagree with. I think both those records Tug were fantastic.
Tug of War, I think he was kind of challenged on. Absolutely. We know, some of those songs that were first presented that the Wings were rehearsing ended up, you know, not on Tug of War, but later on at Pipes of Peace. But yeah, I do think George kind of challenged him a little bit, and then George could get away with saying a few things.
George could.
But right.
Thirty-year-old Hugh Padgham. Like, I don't care how many hits you've had, kid. You can tell me what I can do. Fuck off. That's what he's saying.
Buffalo.
That's exactly what he's saying. You know, I don't care. I've had hits with the Police and Phil Collins and Genesis. Okay, who are they?
Right.
They're pimple on my ass.
Yeah. And then, you know, another interesting thing, too, is you know, Paul asks him, so the overall, you know, experience, it wasn't a favorite one of his. And Hugh said, yeah, definitely spoiled things. So it wasn't necessarily the final result he wasn't necessarily happy with. You know,
no.
So, you know,
which is unfortunate. It really is. No, it's unfortunate that he looks back at somebody who's like your icon. Okay. And
right.
He looks up to him and you have this kind of experience that leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you can see how, you know, Paul can be a really cool guy in the studio, and you can see how he can become a kind of a little bit of a, you know, offended if you say the wrong thing in the studio.
Depending on who you are,
I guess, you know, there was
a wonderful statement in here that sums up a lot. I forget if it was the interview with Hugh or the interview with John Pertoker. He said, there's only one person who could ever tell Paul McCartney, no, your song stinks, and that was Sean Lennon.
It was John Lennon, right, and I think that was Hugh, yeah.
I think that was Hugh, and Hugh says that's actually probably, and that's got to be the God's honest truth.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, cool. I mean, he plays it cool. He takes the high road when talking about Eric Stewart. which was nice, because you really don't want to see a little, you know, a battle between words with two, you know, with both men are talented people. I mean, let's not, you know, take it away from these two individuals, because they've all had their success, Eric and Hugh. It just so happens, unfortunately, this particular one was not a success, you know, to Paul anyways, you know,
to Paul. I mean, not in Paul's canon. And it's, right. You know, it's the one. And now listen, I know it's got its fans. We know that Ken Michaels adores this record, and, right. You know, and it certainly
Kittle,
has its
Kittle tool as well. Yeah.
Kit does this too. And it's got its high points, but it's really the one that is really, by and large, I think a lot of people that just put this one back on the back burner and say the heck with it. But, you know, and we've reviewed it. We've done shows on it. We ranked the tracks on it. So I mean, but I think you and I both agree that it is what it is.
It is what it is. I think there's some really, you know, good stuff on here, and I think there's some crap.
Yes,
you know, on here as well. And as we continue to go along with the magazine, then we see we get Paul's, you know, take on the track by track.
And you know? Yeah, and like he we could just thumb through it real quick, like Stranglehold. Yeah. So all his ratings were out of 5 stars, okay?
Right.
So he gives Stranglehold 2 stars. So you wouldn't really like that. Good Times Coming, he gives 3 stars.
Right. Hold on, for 1 second, though, you also get some adverts
too, absolutely. You know? Awesome pictures in here. So. Great picture from the press, a still from the press video on the underground.
Right. And I'm at
Waterloo Station, I think, is where he is when he gets off. I forget. You know, right. I'm sure our UK friends will correct me.
Right. And then another cool thing too, is he'll talk about the different mixes when it comes to the singles.
Well, that's in the section. All the different singles and remixes and stuff, which is all covered in the section with John Pertoker, the producer. But I mean, as Tom pointed out, great ad. I mean, I never saw this advert in my life until I saw this. And this is just tremendous. High quality photo for Only Love Remains. And the, I'm talking about a hype, right? Play it till your heart is content. 7-inch and 3-track 12-inch are out now, which was, as we read in the book, you know, this was the third and final single from Press to Play, which was just basically a kind of a Hail Mary to, you know, salvage something of it. I mean, I know in the U.S. the album went to number 30. I don't know what it went to in the U.K. off the top of my head.
It did fairly better.
Probably, I think maybe 15. Yeah.
Maybe
15. I'll do a quick check for us. Hold on while we're recording.
Right. But then, you know, to continue with the tracks, you know, then we go to Talk More Talk. You know, he does, excuse me, kind of, you know, talk trash about this one, which is fine.
Talk More Talk. Yeah.
Some of his comments, I think, were fine. I wasn't offended by his judgment on these songs as well. And then you get a little snippet from Hugh as well on each.
Oh
track.
Wait, yeah. Well, Hugh will give you his memory of each song. Forgot about that. Right. You're right.
Yeah, which was a nice touch as well. So, you know, Talk More Talk. I think they only gave 2 stars to. Footprints, now one of my favorite songs.
That's absolutely.
Yeah.
Just a side note, Tom, it got to number 8 in the UK. So it did well.
In the UK. Yeah, it's fine in the UK. I mean, listen, 8 for anybody else but Paul is great.
Right. For Paul, it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Footprints, you know, we talk very highly of, which I was very excited to see. You know, even Hugh says, you know, I love Footprints, reminds me of Norwegian Wood, not musically, but the general vibe. So that was really cool to see. They gave it 4 out of 5, which
is a worthy praise. And he likes it. Reminds me of Norwegian Wood. Now, Only Love Remains, which Hugh says, I remember Tony Visconti coming down to the studio.
Yeah.
We had an orchestra and did it in air. And I know Paul said, and Paul Sinclair, I must say, does such a great job of pulling information from the contemporary resources and the publications of the time, because he's gone through all the stuff that was available and gone back and referenced what Paul said at the time, which is one of the crown jewels of this whole thing.
Yeah,
so
good point.
He's talking about Only Love Remains, and you know, Paul says in 86, people have heard that album say, oh, that's the McCartney I like. So it's like a typical McCartney song, you know, a song like Only Love. But I like that Paul did that. Although he always feels the song should have had an intro. Yeah, he feels it. Feels right. The song just starting out like that, you know, is right. it needed an intro.
Right. So then we move on to Press, which I think, again, you know, he wasn't really fond of, but doesn't really trash either, giving it a 3 out of 5. Hugh, I can say about Press is that it's an up-tempo song that sounds very 80s to me. And that was another thing about Hugh. Interesting where, you know, he said it is of its time. He said it does sound very 80s to him. So, you know, I know there's, you know, some people might not like it when they say like an album is of its time, or yeah, you can tell what decade it's from, you know, but yeah, I definitely think that I listened to it and I think, okay, this is an 80s record, you know.
It's an 80s record. And let's try to remember where Paul was at this time. Okay. Right. Paul McCartney in 85, 86 was a 42, 43 year old guy, which by most people was considered a dinosaur then.
Right.
He wasn't really hip with anybody of the video age and anybody that was big then. So he was considered a dinosaur 35 years ago.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's hard to think about it now, but this was somebody trying to stay hip, you know, and right. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. He's always wanted to do that. And I think that when he gets criticized for it, it kind of pisses me off a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, true.
Because he could just be simple and just say the same old thing, but he's trying to use new technology, new producers. He could just say, you know what, I'm going to just stay Beatle Paul and not go outside of my comfort zone. I'm going to try to stay fresh. I'm going to use new people, which is stuff that he even does now.
Correct. Again, you know, he'll show the cassettes. He'll show, there's a nice picture of the 10-inch Press single, which I just got a couple weeks ago. Yeah, yep. But I learned something. It was only limited to 6,000 copies. I did not know that.
Very limited.
Very, very excited about that. Let's see here. Going on the Pretty Little Head, you know, that's another one that he talks very highly
about. That one they speak very highly of, rightly so. I mean, that actually I think is the highest rating out of all the ratings Paul gave. I think Pretty Little Head is the highest, 4 out of 5 stars.
Well, the same with Footprints as well.
And Footprints as well. Yeah. But Hugh says, I quote, I think this was a case of let's do something out there. Certainly was.
Right. Yeah, it's a nice little picture of the cassette single of Pretty Little Head. You know, they talk about the different mixes on there, which then we'll also get to towards the end this issue. But yeah, 4 out of 5, you know, great stuff. Now great another stuff. One that kind of gets a little bambastered here on the album is Move Over Busker. Ooh, which again, yeah. But you know, one that I think kind of gets shit on a little bit.
Too much, right? You like it, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't mind it. It's not a favorite of mine, though. I don't know if I'd give it a 2 out of 5 like Paul does, maybe 3 out of 5. But, you know, it's not one that I've actually, you know, go to right away when I'm listening to this album.
That's like the album's on, you're listening to it.
I'm listening to it, but, you know, not necessarily excited to hear it either.
No.
Hugh, I quite like the riff on the intro, although I'm not sure about the synthesized guitar. Fine. Moving over to Angry. Now, this was a track that if you read that Eric Stewart interview, this was the track. This was one of the songs that they were working on. Linda calls up Eric Stewart later that night. And then, she's talking to Gloria, his wife. And she goes, tell Eric that he's a bloody genius. So now here he is. He's thinking that, you know.
Now I'm in, right.
I'm in. You know, this is great. And then, you know, then he says a couple weeks later, then he's out, you know. So he's like, one day he's high on the hog. The next thing you know, he's, a pile of shit or something.
Right.
You know, so, Angry, you know, here's another track that, you know, you bring in Phil Collins, you bring in Pete Townsend. I can't say that this is one of my favorite tracks either. I think the 3 out of 5, maybe a little high. I'd probably go 2 out of 5 on this one.
I'm with you on that, partner.
Yeah. But there's great bass line here. I mean, Hugh said this is quite a good bass line. I mean, we did this, I remember, on a Saturday morning. We would have rehearsed a few times and a few takes. One of those go home, lunchtime sort of thing, and then come back and, you knock it out of the park. Again, you know, it's a rocker. Not, we didn't get a lot of rockers in the 80s from Paul, but I don't think it's one of the better ones.
No, not at all. And however absurd, next gets 3 out of 5 stars. Yeah, but now Hugh, I guess, yeah, what did Hugh say about however absurd? I used the wonderful Ann Dudley, who I was not familiar with, when I needed a ranger of all these songs. It doesn't have any structure to it, particularly from a production point of view. You just build it with a bit more orchestration. So he obviously wasn't too fond of the song either.
Right. Yeah, and you know, and Paul does talk about the, you know, the Beatlesque aspect of the song. Right. You know, does it, you know, if, you know, people was like, well, Paul, this one might be a little too Beatly, but then Paul's like, well, you know, if anybody's going to be Beatly, you know,
I can.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, I was really excited about this while I was flipping through reading it, that they included the B-sides as well. So, I love that he talked about the B-sides. I love that he mentions that these B-sides are, you know, a lot better than some of the tracks set
on the album. And
you know.
And to me, as somebody who discovered this album in the CD age, to me, they're part of the album. They're not bonus tracks.
Right.
I don't consider them bonus tracks. Now, you can't say that about every McCartney album because you just know the classics. Like, but to me, somebody who grew up in the CD age, who didn't have this on vinyl initially, to me, Tough on a Tightrope and stuff like that is just, to me, that's just part of the album.
Right.
It's not true.
Yeah, because you got the CD. I mean, if you were to get the record first, you wouldn't have got those bonus tracks.
No. But, you know, vinyl, as I mean, I wasn't getting vinyl, you know, when I was 5 years old in 1986. Right. And you couldn't find a copy on vinyl really very easily in the 1990s.
Now, do you have the Press to Play? Do you have that 86 CD?
I do, actually, here.
Now, does it say that those three songs are bonus tracks on there?
They don't. They don't, okay. You see?
So to you, they're actually part of the album when you're listening to that.
Because there was nothing on here designating it like this is a bonus track. Let's take a look at Red Rose Speedway. Okay, original EMI pressing. Okay, now the same thing here. Now that's a German copy. Hold on. Here we go. But even still, see here now. I see this is a little bit different now. See, Red Rose Speedway, for example, has the same thing.
Right.
You know, a lot around Country Dreamer, the mess. Now, the problem here, the difference is. I had my dad's copy of the record, so I knew where the album ended. I did not know with this. But, I mean, if you were just to buy this, you didn't know. You're looking, okay, these are just – those are the extra tracks on the CD, you know? Mm-hmm. So I always liked the initial print run of this one. It was always nice, I thought.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, to me, a 10-track album ending with However Absurd is – I mean, those three tracks are better than some of the stuff on the album, to your point.
Agreed. Agreed. So, you know, they start with It's Not True, which got a favorable rating of 3 out of 5. Excuse me. That one was mixed by our buddy Julian Mendelson, who we talked to last year, which we brought that up with him right away. You know, again, this one does even better, 4 out of 5, which, you know, I think would have been a great, nice fit on this album, perhaps. And then Tough on a Tightrope going 3 out of 5. Now he continues with the songs here, and I really love this because then he adds Hang Glide, which was another Stuart McCartney composition, which was the instrumental. They gave that 4 out of 5, which was really cool. Maybe this would have been a nice fit on the album as well. You know, every once in a while he'll throw in an instrumental on an album, which I think is a nice touch. Then we go to Spies Like Us, which again is another,
which great is addition. Crazy. Great addition. I know Tom's a big fan. It's crazy. I think that was his, I mean, and he makes a point of it in here that, it was his last top,
top 10 hit in the US.
It was his last top 10 hit in the US, and it's not represented on any compilation.
Right.
How crazy is that? It was his last top 10 hit.
It didn't make all the best. I don't understand
all the best.
Why.
Wingspan. Right. Pure McCartney, and it's like that was a top 10 single for him, and he's just like, yeah, I don't care. That's wild.
Yeah. I just purchased two pitcher discs of Spies Like Us. I picked up the 12-inch pitcher disc of Spies Like Us, and then the 7-inch that's all crazy.
7-inch it's all shaped. That's the one.
Kind of like the you know, We All Stand Together crazy shaped pitcher disc. So should have those coming any soon. But yeah, and then you know also includes my favorite song that was done during those sessions. Oh my God, such a beautiful song. Maybe it wouldn't have fit the album, maybe, but and I'm glad they didn't do anything crazy to it. It's like
I think it could have fit the album. I think it could have fit the album, and it's got a it's got a similar vibe to like Footprints a little bit in terms of like the, you know, acoustic stuff, you know.
Right. So then, so that was cool. I mean, I'm glad he included all those songs. I thought that was a great job by Paul for doing that. Then there's a little headline, you know, what happened next. So then they talked about, you know, what happened after Press the Play. And then I think right up to The Flowers in the Dirt.
Right. You know, right. Period.
And then we get to another interview, right?
Yeah. A little small section here, which is somebody who really loves the remixes. I mean, the interview with Hugh was great, but you're reading, and it wasn't as much in depth and stuff, but an interview with John Tokes Patoker, the guy who did a lot of the remixes on this album and did a few other stuff for Paul too. And, you know, he worked with a whole bunch of people. It's Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, Paul Young, and everybody. Right. And, remix Spies Like Us. So kind of goes into the interview. Paul asks him, you know, how did he actually get the gig working with McCartney and so forth. And,
right.
Just incredibly interesting because you think about all the so many different remixes. It was the age too. You had a 12-inch remix, 7-inch remix, a video remix. You know, it was all different, all kind of different edits made during this time. But
and it's just funny how none of those audio remixes included that you know, She's Leaving Home bit from the
video,
Pretty Little Head video, right?
Right, but then you get a video edit of the Press. You get Press's video edit released as a single, which is the video edit, but you don't get the Pretty Little Head video edit. It's very confusing, and what is the damn shame with a lot of these remixes, and Paul points this out, is that none of them
get them on CD.
You didn't get them on CD. You got them on cassette. You got them on 12-inch, but you never got them actually officially issued on CD. That's a shame. Hopefully that changes eventually. If Paul revisits this album. Yeah.
Well, and that's another question that I had for you, because I one of the reasons why I question why he's doing this, if it's not a favorite of his, is we want McCartney to do an archive edition of this album, do we not? I mean, this would be, I think, a great addition to the archive set if he does this. But this kind of thing, if he sees, like, you know, still, like, unfavorable reviews of these tracks, then why would he give us then? Give us
that. I think the way culture is now, especially more people exposed to music, I think the album... I don't think the album is going to get criticized, you know, upon, you know, I think every album has been, let's put it this way. How many of these archive campaigns have come out and people have said that album still sucks? Answer, none.
Yeah.
So for the most part, I mean, even Rolling Stone who trashed McCartney 2, that comes out again 9 years later. Oh, it's experimental. It's great. He's in, you know, well, no, he was great in 1980, you clowns. You just didn't hear it. You just didn't hear it or realize it. So I think you'll get a lot of the same when this comes out again.
Well, I hope so. You know, they talk about the, you know, the process, the remixing process, what he would do.
Oh
what he would present to Paul after he was finished. So that was very informative, especially if you're somebody that inspires to be a mixer. You know, in the business. So that's a really good interview. Then we talk about the critics, what the critics say. And there was actually some really good reviews for Press the Play when it first came out, which I was kind of surprised by. Because, I remember the press video coming out. I watched it the first when it premiered. And but it didn't make me want to go out and
buy the record.
I did read reviews of the album. So it was just really cool to see these now.
Well, it's cool. And again, kudos to Paul for doing this, because he everybody, and he points it out, all Q Magazine, the LA Times, Rolling Stone, Chicago Tribune, all hailing it as like the greatest record since Band on the Run. Now,
and that's just funny because he's still getting this. He's still getting, this is his best album since Band on the Run, you know.
Yeah. Oh, the best album since Band on the Run.
On the Run. Yeah.
You know, the best album since, the best album since. And you know what? But it's hype. Newspapers and publications want to sell magazines. So right. if they're going to throw McCartney on the front cover, it would, and Paul mentions this in his piece, that it's foolish for them not to, they're not going to just throw shade right. At an album and right. say, well, we really think it sucks, but we're not going to say that. We're going to just say it's his best album since Band on the Run, which right. of course it's not.
And yeah, and then exactly what he said with Q Magazine. I mean, Q Magazine, this was their premier copy. Paul's on the cover. You know, yes. they're reviewing Press to Play. Are they really going to trash
no.
a record that they're just honored to have the musician on their cover? You know,
they're not going to do that. It's bad for business. You know? So
right,
we're gonna,
right.
you know,
and then you've got Chris Selavik
also saying
very highly about the record. Go ahead.
A work, Chris says, a work quote that stands almost on par with Band on the Run, end quote. Now, come on. We interviewed Chris. He probably doesn't even remember that he said that, but.
But he also did say when we were interviewing that, you know, he wanted to do it for more like a you know, in favor of Paul. I mean, Paul was getting a lot of trash then, and he really wanted to.
You're right. I remember him saying that. You're right. right. He wanted to kind of give him, because he was always getting crapped on about everything. Right. Yeah. But, you know, I hate that critics do that. Just listen to an album for what it is, you know, and trash it. But don't call it it's the best ever since. And that just gets stale. Right. That just gets incredible stale. Anthony DeCurtis called. Yeah, Anthony DeCurtis was a great writer from Rolling Stone. So one of the sturdiest LPs of McCartney's post-Beatle career. Like, okay. Now, don't get me wrong. If you could be if you're in an 80s McCartney mood, which we right. all kind of go through, you can listen to this album for like once or twice. I'm like, okay, but then you're going to put it back. That's just it.
Yeah, I like Lynn's the headline here for Chicago Tribune. No silly love songs on Press to Play, and calls it McCartney's most rocking album in ages.
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 I guess she missed back to the egg.
She missed back to the egg.
She missed back to the egg. Sweetheart, go back 6 years, 7 years, hon. Or did you miss that one? Or maybe she wasn't old enough.
Maybe she wasn't writing then. Who knows?
She might not have been writing. His are yeah. sturdiest. That's what I'm saying. Like, people, get your head out of your ass.
Yeah. Very interesting. I mean, this was a really cool. I'm glad this was out. And then on the second to last page, then you get
The discography, which is
discography,
so great.
The UK single discography with Press. You get all the different versions. You get the 7-inch, 10-inch, and 12-inch. Pretty Little Head. You get 7-inch, 12-inch, and cassette. And then Only Love Remains. You got the 7-inch and the 12-inch.
Yeah.
You know, all with
and
the
it's nice.
Remixes.
And they're giving you the labels and all them, and that's everything. Right. And to keep track of all
who
these remixes.
Them? Yeah. And who mixed them? You know,
that's cool. I mean, that's very nice right. to have. Yeah, who mixed them and even who helped them? I mean, so
and it's too bad he didn't talk to Julian, because Julian here remixed two of these as well.
Yeah,
it looks like so. You know, it's too bad he wasn't able to get Julian for three of them. Actually, he remixed the 12-inch stuff on a tightrope. Then you got the 12-inch. It's Not True. And then you got the 10-inch It's Not True. So he remixed It's Not True a couple times.
He did.
You know, so, you know, but we got him. So that was cool.
we got him. But I mean, it's just a pretty affordable thing. I think it was 12 yeah. quid.
Right.
It turned out to be about, I think maybe a little less than $20, but.
And it was got here quick too. I was
quick.
Actually surprised how quick. I thought it was going to be like 2 weeks.
Easily.
You know? You know, and here it is. I think it was like 4 days later I got
it. Yeah, you got it before I did, and you're west of me. So that was actually right. interesting that you got it before I did. But I mean, kudos to Paul and all the folks at SDE.com to do this. I listen, PSA, Paul, you could do one of these for every one of McCartney releases, and we'll buy them.
Right. Yeah. Really like the illustration here by Brianna Ashby. Great job here on that. I like the image of Paul. You know, so yeah, I mean, the adverts are really cool. The you know, track,
yeah, the original, cool. The track by track, the adverts. I mean, you're not going to see this stuff well researched, well thought out, laid out. I mean, this is just superb research and put together, and everything we've come to expect from the folks over there at Super Deluxe Edition. It's just this is our people, they get us.
Yeah, so good job with you, Paul. Glad to have this, and you know, maybe do 2,000 next time. I think this is sold out now. I don't think it's available anymore. Hopefully, you know, if you did get one, if you got it signed, let us know, you know, in the comments. We'd love to hear from you if you got one. And what did you think of it? Was it worth your time? Was it worth the money?
I tell you what, it is because it's such a criticized and overlooked period of McCartney's career that has not really been given that much attention to. So I mean, Flowers got its due praise. This is the first time that this period has really been looked at on this level. Short of like this could accompany an archive. This could go right well with an archive. All the work that went into this, and maybe when you and I talked about this last week, that you know off the air. You know, that if he actually is going to do an archive release of Press to Play, he can use a lot of this material.
Well, yeah. I mean, if Hugh's not open for making comments about, you know, that time, I mean, obviously they can probably, you know, borrow the comments from this. Absolutely. You know, it seems like, you know, the people, you know, Jerry Murata, I mean, he seemed to have a pleasant time making this.
He loved it. We interviewed Jerry over the summer, early spring, late spring. I forget. He was a great interview, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, bundle of laughs.
He was hysterical. We could have talked to him for hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, definitely would love to talk to Carlos. I mean, you know, the guitar player who performed on the record.
Carlos,
you know,
Alomar.
Carlos, yeah, absolutely. And you know, talk to more people on that during that record, and you know, hopefully we can sometime soon. So Hugh, we'd love to talk to you as well.
Yes we would.
Yeah, anyways, but yeah, anything you want to add before we sign off on this one?
Not much, brother. Just looking to keep digging the music and digging all the content and working on our shows over the next few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you everybody out there for joining us. We appreciate it. Please leave your comments in the comment section, and we'll try to respond or give them the thumbs up. And everybody out there, we really appreciate it. So you can get a hold of us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can find us on YouTube. Hopefully you're watching us on YouTube right now. That's Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. If you're listening to the audio on Podbean or iTunes or iHeartRadio, whatever, please come on over and check out our YouTube channel. Please subscribe to that. We'd really appreciate it. We're well over 700 subscribers now, so we're you know, looking to continue to build the YouTube page. So please help us and support us there as well. Andy, it's great to see you as well. We'll be seeing you again here soon for the next episode. As always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care, everyone.